The debate over what government should do in economic hard times is usually about whether government should borrow and spend more to restart the economy, or whether government should shrink and reduce spending to prompt economic recovery. But there's a public health side to this debate. Sanjay Basu, in his new book that he's co-written called The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills, looks at how sharp government cutbacks on social services and health services correlates with suicide, depression, and death. Sanjay Basu is an assistant professor of medicine and an epidemiologist at the Prevention Research Center at Stanford University. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You've written that if austerity were tested as a medication in a clinical trial, it would have been stopped years ago because of its deadly side effects. So define what you mean by austerity, and then expand on what kind of bad health effects it's had.
Austerity means the indiscriminate cutting of social safety nets and government budgets during particularly recessionary periods. And it turns out that during recessions, bad health outcomes are not inevitable. In fact, it's been well known in the economics literature that sometimes death rates go down during recessions. For example, as people can afford to drive less, less traffic fatalities happen. But hidden behind that average rate are a lot of worse news in terms of increased alcohol-related deaths and suicides that seem disproportionately among those for whom austerity has impacted versus those communities that have undergone stimulus.
So your basic argument is that extreme austerity measures in some areas correlates with these bad health impacts.
Indeed. We see these so-called natural experiments where similar communities or even whole countries experience the same recession, undergo different policies, and we see negative both economic and health effects under the austerity communities.
Well, in fact, you look at different countries, and since 2008, we've had a lot of different experiments in how governments deal with the fact that their tax revenue goes down. Do they cut back the budget? Do they borrow and try to keep spending to keep services available? Give an example of a country that instituted deep cuts in public health and social spending to deal with the recession, and tell us what happened there.
Certainly, Greece is the classic example of severe austerity. Greece actually had originally a smaller recession than Iceland, for example, but Greece undergoing severe austerity ended up in a vicious cycle in which the already low demand prompted even lower demand from austerity as people were unemployed and couldn't afford to spend and drive up consumer spending. In the context of that austerity, they cut mosquito control budgets, HIV prevention budgets. Now Greece has had the first large malaria outbreak in over 30 years. Its HIV rate has skyrocketed as young people who are facing over a 50% unemployment rate now have converted to injection drug use. And so we're seeing some pretty dramatic health effects in the context of austerity.
So part of it's just the ill effects that we already see from unemployment, and unemployment's more severe in countries like Greece that have not provided unemployment insurance, for example, to keep people with some money in their pocket.
Indeed, but unemployment and suicides and these bad effects do not seem to be perfectly correlated. For example, in Sweden, in spite of extremely high unemployment spikes throughout the 1990s, we didn't see a rise in these adverse health effects, in part because Sweden instituted specific programs that turned out to be both cost-saving and reduced public health bad outcomes.
Give an example of a country that took a different route than Greece did after 2008 and maintained or maybe even expanded its spending on public health, and what result came out of that?
Mm-hmm. Iceland, in spite of having the largest recession in world history per the size of its economy, ended up voting no on austerity and instead gradually paying their banking debts back slowly rather than all at once through public sector safety net cuts. And Iceland actually experienced a rather dramatic recovery from the recession and, in fact, did not experience any negative adverse health outcomes, preserving their universal healthcare system, as well as not experiencing rises in suicides, alcoholism, and the like.
Do all countries have the same ability to maintain their spending, though? I mean, we can print more money in the United States, but some countries don't have that option, do they?
No, that's an excellent point. Iceland and Greece were under very different social circumstances and political circumstances with Greece in the euro. But what we find is that time and time again throughout history, since the Great Depression and the East Asian crisis, the Russian mortality crisis, and the current recession, taking the austerity path seems to reduce short-term deficits but increase longer-term deficits. stimulus seems to increase shorter-term deficits, but stimulate the kind of economic growth that we see reduces long-term debts and also preserves public health in the interim.
Sanjay Basu is my guest. He's an epidemiologist at the Prevention Research Center at Stanford in California, and he's the co-author of a new book called The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills. So you've given the example of Greece and Iceland, and you say the United States is kind of in the middle when it comes to mitigating the impacts of lowered spending on health and other areas.
We benefited from an initial stimulus, and it's a bit too early to see all the full public health effects of the sequester. But we're already seeing differential effects by state in terms of austerity versus stimulus in state budgets. So, for example, if we compare different states and how they responded to unemployment spikes since 2008 and 2009, those states that responded with more beneficial safety net programs for the recently unemployed experienced lower spikes in suicides, in spite of correcting for pre-existing conditions and pre-existing mental health and health care. So, in fact, not just health care coverage, but our public health system and even our economic system seems to have profound health effects.
Are we seeing the same thing we talked about with countries when it comes to states? Because some states have to maintain a balanced budget, too.
Indeed. And under those constraints, we do see the same dynamic in terms of austerity and stimulus predicting outcomes for alcohol-related deaths, preventable hospitalizations, and suicides.
Your research suggests that investing a dollar in public health programs can yield up to $3 in economic growth. How do those two correlate and why?
Depending on what kinds of programs you stimulate, different people are able to both preserve their jobs and subsequent consumer spending, but also there's a standardized calculation in which we can see how much added benefit there is to preventing disease rather than waiting till people are actually ill in order to treat disease later. For example, in the 1990s, New York City suffered from a very large drug-resistant tuberculosis epidemic. It cost over $1 billion to control, but 10 times less than that to prevent, according to the best estimates.
You draw several lessons from your research in The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills. The first is always the physician's mandate, do no harm. How does that translate into this discussion?
Yes, what we've been seeing during this recession is a great deal of experimentation with policy around safety nets. And indeed, if we had the mantra that one should first not experiment with people, but use the public health rule, known as the precautionary principle. That is where when things are controversial in terms of policy, we should first act to protect people and do what is safest. If there was a chemical in the water supply and we don't know if it causes cancer, we should first act to minimize our exposure. The same goes for economic policy, to look at the lessons of history and to avoid such large austerity experiments.
Another message that you draw from this is that rather than thinking of joblessness as a problem with the economy, a problem with a person's economics, you call it, we should look at it as a pandemic. How does it compare?
There were some pretty amazing studies in the 1990s that asked, if everyone in the United States had wonderful health care and perfect access and insurance, how many young people's deaths could we prevent? And it turns out that the answer was only about 15 to 20%. Because health doesn't start in an exam table or in an intensive care unit. It starts at home in our neighborhoods and the quality of the food we eat, whether we smoke or drink too much, the safety of our neighborhoods. And unemployment, it turns out, is a major determinant of that. It's why your zip code turns out to be a great statistical predictor of your life expectancy.
We are going to have the Affordable Care Act fully in effect in 2014, at the beginning of next year. Does that level of social spending on health kind of balance things out should we enter into another economic downturn? Is that going to be beneficial when it comes to preventing the ill effects of austerity?
It's too early to tell what the specific buffering effects of the Affordable Care Act might be, but if we can learn lessons from other countries, those during this recession who had universal health care systems or at least universal coverage, with which the Affordable Care Act gets us closer to, did in fact buffer their populations from severe consequences much more effectively than those with more private insurance-dependent systems.
Did any nations that did have health care provided by the government more directly have to cut back on that, or were they all able to preserve those systems?
Almost all of them in Europe were able to preserve it. It was more of a political decision on whether or not to do so. For example, Britain's National Health Service has been really a model for many countries for many years, but under the new Conservative government, it's choosing to gradually privatize it. We're seeing rather dramatically and rapidly a decline in the quality of services and in the quality of outcomes in terms of health delivered by the National Health Service now.
The third message that you draw from this research is Keynesian. You say expand investments in public health when times are bad. Don't cut back. Don't keep them the same. Make them greater. Where, why, how?
The standard macroeconomic advice and evidence is the opposite of what you should do as a household. As a household, in bad times, you should cut back and save. But a government actually needs to do quite the opposite in bad times in order to help stimulate and also protect the population during bad times. One needs to spend during bad times and save during the good times. And there's very specific programs, such as active labor market programs, which help people get rapidly back into employment after unemployment, that seem to have both cost-saving effects, economic stimulus effects, and as a side effect, also reduce suicides, alcoholism, and other public health bads.
I got to say, this fits in neatly with followers of Paul Krugman, who think that this is the approach we should take to fix our macroeconomic problems. Have you found anybody who's read your work who has gotten changed their mind about that?
Many. You know, when as a scientist, when multiple independent scientific groups come up with the same answers time and time again, it's a sense that people are starting to achieve consensus. And certainly in the peer-reviewed research literature, there's not a lot of debate about this. The difficulty is translating that into the public discourse where it seems to be another conversation going on.
Sanjay Basu, the new book he's co-written is called The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.